This episode is brought to you in part by Swim. Here's the thing about wishlist apps. Most of them just sit there. A customer saves a product, and then nothing happens. Swim actually activates that data. When someone wishlists a product, you could trigger price drop or back in stock alerts and feed that intent directly into Klaviyo or your CRM. You're not guessing what people want because they've told you. Plus, customers can share wishlists for gifts, and your team can view them to offer personalized service online or in-store. And unlike cart abandonment, wishlist data is permission-based. These are people raising their hand saying, "Hey, I want this, just not right now." Swim's been around for over a decade. It powers 45,000 stores and installs in about 5 minutes. You could try it for free today at getswim.com/Kurt. That's getswym.com/Kurt. Okay, we just finished.
We did some shit.
Yeah, tell me about it. All right, we completed our most ambitious landing page to date for Montana Knife Company, fan favorite.
Yeah.
MKC, such a great story. You know, people love hearing about MKC. Man, what's the long and the short of it? What did we build here? What are we talking about in today's episode?
Well, so Montana Knife Company, famous for their cool limited drops and their high-end made-in-America knives, but they always only made straight knives.
Or
is that what they're called? Fixed blade knives?
Fixed blade knife. I mean, sure. It doesn't fold. A kitchen knife is a fixed blade.
Okay. I just have knives that cut. I don't know.
Those are fixed blades.
Yeah. Yes. And so they never made a folding knife. I believe their rabid fan base wanted them to make a folding knife.
I was desperate for one. I love folding knives. I have a couple folding knives, and I'm like, man, I just knew if MKC made a folding knife, it'd be awesome, and I'd want it. I hadn't even seen it yet.
And apparently a lot of people felt the same way.
Yeah.
So they were finally making a folding knife, and they were like, you know, this is our biggest release ever, blah, blah, blah. So they wanted to do something crazy for the announcement page where you could, to sell you on this knife that you definitely already want to buy. And so their designer went absolutely ham on it.
Their designer Dan
went ham on it, and they had a big meeting with us that they were like, "Could you build this? Is this possible?" And we, at the end of that meeting, said, "Maybe."
It's a solid maybe. because what they showed us was, if you've ever been on like a fancy watch site, like I'm sure if we go to the Swiss watch sites, Rolex, Omega, whatever, yeah, we'd find one of these, or Apple for sure. You scroll down the page and, like, you know, the phone, watch, computer, whatever, just dismantles itself in a crazy video, but it's controlled by you scrolling. So, yeah, like, as you're scrolling, you know, the video is playing along with that, but, like, timed right.
Yeah, it's opening and closing, or, like, things are happening. Your MacBook Airs are flying around and rotating while you're scrolling down the page, that
super
sort of stuff.
Super theatrical experience.
And they wanted to do that a lot.
And you only ever see that on, like, huge brands, premium luxury stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, BMW, Rolex, Omega, Apple are the ones where you're going to see this stuff. So I've never built this, right? You know, that's the reality of it.
But, those were the crown jewels of the page. But, I mean, everything on that, like, the page was more of a, I made it more akin in my head when I was structuring it out. It was almost more of a slideshow. And that there's, like, then there's this screen, essentially, and it's like, well, then this on this screen, this moves like this, and this moves like this, and then this scrolls down from the top, but this flies in from the side, and this types itself, this text types itself in while this line gets bigger. Like, every single moment of that, every single element in that site was doing something fiddly. And, you know, it pretty much was like, all right, I'm pretty sure I could do this. It's just going to be a lot to get it done. But anyway, we got it done. And that's the show. Good to talk to you. Good seeing you. Talk to you next week.
Well, all right. So we spent, it took you 3 weeks.
It took me three weeks from all I had was a Figma file and nothing to it being on Shopify, working pretty much the way they wanted it to work. And then there was probably another 3 weeks of them being like, oh, well, we are changing this video, or we're adding more parts to this like exploder animation. And, you know, so they had some stuff, you know, that I think they got a little ahead of themselves too. They're like, it'll do X, Y, and Z. I'm like, okay, great. And I kind of did what they wanted with what they had. And then I was like, I need the real stuff now. And it was kind of like, oh shit. Like they had other things going on, but they also need to give me stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, it ended up taking like 2 months about, but I mean, I was ready to go after 3 weeks while also doing, you know, all my other work here. Yeah. So it really wasn't that bad.
A few weeks for the total dev time, but then something this complicated, you have so many revisions and really content leads design. And so in some cases working with placeholders and you see the real content, you're like, okay, so revise.
Yeah.
And so that process we expected, but then the end result, would you think you're proud of this?
Yeah,
or
I know.
Wouldn't be here.
It's the coolest, hardest thing I've ever made in my life. Like I was showing, you know, my family, they're kind of like, they don't understand what I do. And
type on a computer and money comes
out. Exactly. And they're like, yes, websites and stores. Like my dad was just like, could you make a website for this plumber I know? Like up until like 2 years ago, he was doing that. And I was like, no, dad, I can't. That's not my job.
Plumber should be on Shopify.
I don't think is he selling pipes on Shopify? No. Okay. No, I truly was like, I was like sat down next to him on the couch and loaded on my phone. I was like, check out this shit. And was like scrolling through it. He was not impressed because he doesn't understand how hard it was.
I showed it to my grandfather-in-law over the weekend. And I don't know if he was humoring me, but he was suitably impressed.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's part of it. Showing it on your phone and it works perfectly. Because given the size of this page and all the stuff moving, I feel like that is like the underrated achievement of it is it works absolutely perfectly on phones with all this stuff going on.
Let's recap here before we keep going. Montana Knife Company, based in Montana, proud U.S. manufacturer of fixed blade knives.
Well, now all types of knives.
Now also sell it. Yeah, they had a hunting knife, kitchen knives, which, man, I want that kitchen knife set real bad.
Those kitchen knives are expensive.
Oh, God, they're nice. Now they have their first folding knife. Really looks phenomenal, but you got to justify it. You got to build the hype and you got to show it to people, right? You got to just show them like this is the level of the effort that went into this design. We thought through everything. This is the precision. And for the people, you know, if I'm spending $400 on a folding knife.
Yeah, let's stop for a second here and say
this is a $400 folding
it's
knife.
$390, I think it is. Or
okay,
maybe $400.
You're right.
But, you know, so when you're asking people to buy a $390, $400 folding knife, which is a lot more than the folding knife you can go get at Bass Pro Shops or whatever, or
yeah,
Walmart,
I have other options.
You got to justify it. You got to be like, here's why this is $400. You're going to get $400 worth of joy out of this knife. And that was kind of
this is what it took.
Yeah, this is one of the main purposes. That's the main purpose of this page, is to justify that pricing.
Yeah, well, we're building hype. And then MKC's always been a drop model. Manufacture the inventory in advance. This is what we have available. This is what we're going to sell. This is available at this time. And get it. First come, first serve.
Many countdown timers on that website
Yes.
that we have placed.
All entirely legit, referring to real events. So then they're on Shopify Plus, which is great because it has, you know, like a drop mode where I end up in the checkout and it says like, all right, you're in line. Don't close this window, which you need for, you know, the amount of traffic that a site like this gets. So, okay, high stakes. They do the launch. What did it do?
Well, they did the launch on June 4th. It was gone in an hour. They did over $1 million in that 1 hour. That is it's less than $10 million in 1 hour, but it was definitely more than $1 million in that hour. And that's all we're going to be saying. So yes, I made a landing page that made $1 million in an hour. I'm just going to say that.
And you know, honestly, you're soft pedaling it there because the way the Shopify analytics work, it just shows you that 1 hour window.
Yeah, I can't get anything more granular than an hour. So
it was two minutes.
It might have been well over $1 million in 10 minutes.
I think it's faster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think this was like 2 minutes at least based on past experience mm-hmm. with these. You know, and what's funny about it is like, it's supply constrained. If they had the inventory, if it was there, they could have sold, you know, yeah, several times.
They're going to be doing more drops of it, like when they make more of them.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's another part of the, of their narrative, is that the fact that's like, we are making these in our facility in Montana.
Yes.
And so they kind of, they're constrained. That's their constraint.
Yeah. Is, you can only make them so fast.
Is their level of hand making quality that they're doing.
Yeah. Man, that's a cool facility.
That another part of the page was going into how cool the facility was.
It is. Well, it's, you know, when you cut these blades, you have a sheet of steel. You
know, Magna cut steel.
And then you cut the shape of the blade with, you know, the shank, the handle part out of it. And what do you do with the steel that's left over? They turn those into panel inserts for the railings that go around the second floor of the building. I thought that was super cool. That is totally unrelated to this.
Yeah. I don't know.
They have a helicopter pad. That's cool.
Well, they got to drop in. They got to drop in the steel billets.
I mean, it's Montana.
Yeah. So when they turned this over, and an event. I don't know where to begin.
Our landing page goes live, and for as much effort as went into this, you don't get to buy anything from it. The landing page is purely, hey, sign up for our emails.
Like, this is coming.
This is the most insane email capture page ever conceived.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you sign up for it, get in line for the launch, and hopefully you're able to get the product. If you get the product, amazing. You know, if you don't get the product, you still want to come back.
Yeah, you got this cool-ass page taunting you, it's still out, it's coming soon again. Like, it'll be back.
I wanted the real experience. I wanted to attempt to buy it, you know? And so I had a calendar event in my phone. I didn't show up fast enough. I showed up in the first hour, sold out. Like, you had to be there in advance. Mm-hmm. That was my mistake. I should have set my reminder earlier and then just been refreshing the page. Over the pandemic, I used to buy sneakers like this, right? I can't believe, I'm so mad I messed this up. I mean, I'll get one in the future, I'm sure. But yeah, but it's more than that. Like, they had press features, but getting those, part of that is being able to show the content. And they're like, you know, when you have this incredible landing page, I think it makes it a lot easier for press partners to write about it. So that goes live. They build the hype. They're sending emails. We're posting on Instagram. Then you launch the availability. Date and time is public. They all know it in advance.
June 4th. Yep.
Yep. Sells out. You know, at least without giving away the exact number, at least $1 million worth of units in minutes.
But it was more than $1 million. So yeah. So the main thing for me was everything on this site, on this page, is a fiddly bit.
Fiddly bit.
Like,
that's our technical phrase.
It's moving in some way. It's fading in. It's fading out. It's coming in. It's leaving. And that's before you even get to the exploders. I mean, that's what I'm calling them, where they move, or the flip books.
The exploding diagram.
Yeah. Or they're more of a flip. There's like a flip book too, where it's moving. And there's the big one. It's a flip book. And then at certain points it freezes. So a diagram text can come in and tell you exactly what you're looking at. And that text is not embedded in it. That text is actual text on the page that types itself in. So it's like, so I need to freeze and stop this and then restart it again from that point and continue going on. So that was the main thing for me, is that it's like, all right, every single piece of this I've done before, like once on a page. Like, a page will have a cool thing that did this little animation. But here it's like, oh, we have like 100 elements that all have an animation on them. So it's like, okay, that's going to be annoying to do. And then you're just like, you know, when you're doing that, you're sort of just like, that was too fast. Like, that should be what's 0.33 seconds? That 0.33 seconds is too slow. So yeah, it should be 0.25 seconds. Like, you know.
Because the way to think of this landing page, it is a motion graphic.
100%.
It's motion graphics. It's a commercial. Instead of vertical, it was horizontal and it was a movie, this is a commercial.
I mean, if it stayed on one page and it was not controlled by user scroll, if you just sat and loaded the page and then the page just played itself, it was a 30-second ad for a Rolex watch you saw while you were watching the Masters. Like, yeah, that's what that is.
That was, yeah, the presentation, the style, the quality.
Yeah. And then there was like the wild card was the flip books or the videos or whatever they were going to be, like I wasn't sure yet.
Have you ever watched your Meta Ads acquisition costs double or triple overnight and then just sat there staring at it like it personally insulted you? You check your ad account metrics, you check Google Analytics, you check Shopify, you ask your agency if anything changed. You wonder, maybe just for a second, whether Mercury is in retrograde, but you find nothing. Because there's nothing to find. Meta just had a bad day. And this happens more than you'd think. The Meta Bad Day Detector by Breezeway and eCommerce Alley was built for exactly this. It pulls live data across over 50 DTC brands and tells you whether everyone got hit or whether it's actually you. It's a tool that hundreds of e-commerce brands look at every morning before looking at their ads or their numbers. And it's completely free. Visit ecommercealley.com/bad to see if it's you or if Meta just had a bad day.
Because what we got from them was a static design, a mock-up of, like, these are the sections. Scenes. Mm-hmm. These are the scenes. And then we had to talk through together what was possible, what those animations were, and then attempt it.
You know, it's like, and this transitions into this. So, like, this goes up, and then that means this comes in from the bottom and, like, you know, all that sort of stuff. And they had a page that was like a watch site.
We had an inspiration example.
They had a watch site that was an inspiration example. I kind of knew what they were talking about from Apple's website. Like, you go on the Mac Mini landing page, like the Mac, it's like got the hand that holds it and it's spinning around.
It spins as you scroll.
And then on the, so I was like, okay, that's how I'll do it. And so I was kind of like, yeah, I think I know how I'm going to do this. And my initial thought on how to do it was completely wrong. And it,
how so?
It, so Apple does it with video. And
that's how I assume you would do
it. Yeah, it's how I assume you, because it's like, okay, what am I really doing? A video is just individual images. Like, we know what a movie is. A movie is just a lot of photos being played really fast in front of you.
You know, every movie is a persistence of vision, optical illusion.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, well, what we're looking at here when they're scrolling through this is they're just looking, they're scrolling, and with every tick of their mouse, it's moving through static images. Well, that's a movie. And that's what Apple does. If you right-click on the Mac Mini page and you go, you could click and see View Video. Click on that. It opens in a new window. It's a three-second video of this Mac Mini spinning around.
That's clever.
And so, and also, when you think about it, you go, okay, well, what is more efficient in terms of loading a page? An HTML5 video or loading 400 individual images all at the same time?
If I have a three-second video and it's 30 frames per second, I have to load 90 photos.
I have to load 90 images. So it's like, what's better for a website to load, a three-second video or 90 images at one time?
Okay, give me the format optimized for this. I say video.
Yeah, it's video. So I'm like, I'm making video. So I did it. I was like, I think I'm going to need videos from you guys. So just give me the biggest video that you have of this.
And then we do the resizing?
And then I'll do the resizing. I'll do the re-encoding. I'll set it up. So there's things called keyframes. I know a lot about video encoding.
I was going to say, one of your, your expert level.
I used to sail the high seas a lot. And so I was like, well, clearly those are the keyframes that are the frames that are like fully encoded. Well, like the other frames are kind of blurry, but you don't notice it because every 10th frame is a keyframe.
Yeah.
Your eyes don't really see. So I figured, just give me this giant video and I'm going to re-encode it. It'll be great. And then I found a JavaScript library called Scrolly.js that does this exact thing. It loads a video, you scroll through it, and with every scroll, it progresses the video at a rate that you can set. So I'm like, this is it. Clearly, this is what it will be. Apple's using video. Perfect. I do that. It's okay. It's working all right. It's not as nice and as crisp as I would like it to be.
I remember it. We were so thrilled that it worked, but it wasn't refined. We figured we could get there, though.
I mean, yeah,
we were like, you went 0 to 1.
I had it in 2 hours. I like had it. I was like, I had a thing that told me this was not impossible. So I was kind of like, this is great. Like, this is awesome.
Pat yourself on the back.
Yeah. I was like, check this. Day one. Woo! Yeah. I was like, check this shit out. And so I did it and I was like, all right, that's fine. We can get this going. Okay, let's load it up on Chrome. Chrome barfed for like 2 seconds.
Got a technical term.
And then loaded the page. So like Chrome was
that's
just
that's what
like,
you want. Yeah, in a Chrome site experience. Like, eh.
And then, okay, there you go. And I was like, that's not great.
Right?
And then I was like, how does it work on my phone? And it crashed Safari on my phone. So like literally Safari was like, I'm loading this page. No, I'm not.
As web developers, if you manage to crash the browser,
yeah.
Wow, you really broke it.
Yeah, it broke Safari on my phone, literally would not load the page, made like the little weird sad file, like ping, and was like, wah. And so I was like, okay, that's not going to work.
Uh-oh. And I remember when that happened.
And I realized what the problem is that Apple does it once on a page.
What do you mean?
There's one video.
Okay. You're in their website, apple.com. Yeah.
And it's like 600 pixels wide, and that's that. This design, we're doing it three times, and it needs to be the entire width of the whole screen.
It's full screen.
It's full screen, you know, well, obviously, it needs to look great on my 2,000 pixel wide monitor.
Well,
so the video's got to be 2,000 pixels
wide. It's a detailed but dark video. That's tough on compression. Where, like, you need a higher quality to not have that end up looking real blocky.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, fuck. Like, that was my goal here. So I was like, there's no way. I was like, this, how do I do this the other way? And so what the watch site did that they were kind of going off of, the watch site is not on Shopify. I had to break it to them. So I was like, so slow down here. It was like an entire Vue.js.
They had a headless setup just to run this type of landing page.
They had a special headless web app built specifically to run this page. Now, and they were like, why don't you do it like them? And I was like, okay, give me $150,000 and I'll make it happen.
And we'll be back in 6 months.
Yeah. So I don't know how deep you want me to get in the weeds here, but.
Well, ultimately, the solution, if your version was crashing web browsers.
Yeah.
What's the alternative?
The alternative, I was like, okay, well, because think of what we're asking. We're asking, okay, we need this web browser to load three 1920, like full HD videos at once, parse every single frame in that video so it's available for the user to scroll through on page load go.
So to avoid using photos, we used a video, but then once we have the video, we essentially have to turn the frames back into photos to make this effect work.
Kind of, yeah. But I figured that's a smaller load because it's a 3 second video. So therefore it's like 800K. So it's like, okay, yeah.
Which, it's reasonable.
That's fine. But it's the processing requirements to parse through that video was just not.
And a web browser is just not built to do that.
It's not built to do that. It's the video playback in a web browser has been like, play the video.
Yeah.
Like at what the video is, the video's done. Goodbye. Like that's all it's supposed to be doing. So I was like, I guess I got to go in the other direction here and use all the individual images, which I did. So there's an H, again, like I said, I don't know how deep you want me to go on this. There's an element in HTML called the canvas element. And like, it's kind of like a sandbox that you could do things in and make things happen inside the canvas element.
Okay.
So in the canvas element, I preload all of the images in the animation in each individual one. And then it rapidly shows and hides all of them. It just puts one on top of the other, which again is what a movie is. A movie is you're just replacing one image with another really fast.
I know, we have file. This is a solved problem.
Yeah. So it's a flipbook essentially is what it is. It's doing a flipbook through all the images. And that's way faster. And the browser has no problem doing it.
Because the browser is really built to handle images.
Yeah.
And, that canvas element. And, once you switch to that version, you texted me. You were driving home.
So I was just like.
That's your real world test.
Well, because I'm like, all right, this works great. I was building it entirely locally on my computer here at work. Like,
so no load time.
So no load time. It's literally pull this file that's on the file system. And so I was like, that works great. And then I like put it on a web server and I was like, okay, I'm going to drive home in my car, break the law and scroll and find a website.
Well, obviously you did that at a red light.
Yeah. I did.
In park,
yeah, I did. I was parked on the side of the
road.
Definitely. And I was like, let's load the page now, see what happens. And it loaded perfectly on my cellular connection, driving down Gulf Road.
Beautiful.
And so I was just like, oh.
Yeah, you texted me. You're like, it works. I'm on Gulf Road and it works. Yes. Because it meant we'd solve that problem.
Yeah. So, and in that case with the images, I could really massage like how I encoded them and their sizing.
Well, hold on here. First, you were loading a video, but multiple videos. and then doing processing on them so intense we murdered a browser. So instead, our solution is loading hundreds of photos.
Yeah.
How big is this thing?
That's the thing. It's like, okay, we're going to load. How are we going to get around? Okay, we're going to load 4 megabytes of total video on this page. That is the thing. We don't want to force phones to load, have to load up all this stuff. So 4 megabytes, good. We could handle that. Unfortunately, parsing that 4 megabytes of video the way we need to parse it caused your phone to die. It killed it. So instead of that, we're loading 40 megabytes of images. But this whole page, that allows me to lazy load everything. This page is lazy loaded. I checked the numbers this morning. You only load 25% of the page. 20% of the total final page load of that whole page happens on the initial load. And so the rest of the 75% is occurring in chunks as you scroll down the page. And so your phone can handle parsing, pulling down and parsing those chunks. Your desktop has no problem doing it, obviously. And so then when you reach the end of the page, you're at the bottom, 40 megs has been downloaded. But it's happening in stages.
40 megs, but we divide it based on what they're looking at.
Based on what they're looking at.
If I just see it and I'm like, yeah, this is sweet, and I click through,
yeah,
I don't have to load all 40 megs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a heavy experience. We do expect it to be larger.
Yeah. And so, and again, with the images, I could resize the images. So the phones are loading much smaller images in the flipbook than the desktop version.
Out of curiosity, did you run this thing through Core Web Vitals?
It probably is. I bet it, if it doesn't pass, it barely doesn't pass. Because that initial page load is.
Let me try it.
Well, I'll tell you. Okay, let me just call it right now. I'm going to call it right now. We load 7 custom fonts on this page because it really needed those 7 custom fonts with all the different weights. So I bet there's going to be CLS due to the font load. That is my call for what will cause it to fail. Anyway, so while you're doing that, yeah, the mobile version is 40% the size of the desktop one. No, it's 40% smaller. It's 60% the size of the desktop one because I was able to resize all the flipbook images to be way smaller for phones.
Okay, get this. It almost passes.
That's what I said.
CLS, because it doesn't understand what it's looking at.
Yeah.
You get, you know, LCP, FCP, time to first byte, and interaction to next paint, all green, all pass just fine. But CLS just pegs at 1, because I'm guessing it's like, it assumes the whole thing's still loading. It doesn't know what it's doing with this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, that's a technical fail, but in practice, it's not.
I mean, it continues to shock me. Like, if you told me, you're like, yeah, someone made a web page that has giant full screen animations on it and it's 40 megs. How do you think it loads on a phone? I'd be like, oh my God, that site's gotta be ass. It's gotta be terrible.
It's not.
It's not.
It just isn't. You try it incredible. Yourself.
Yeah. I
encourage you.
So that was pretty much it. And that, you know, that allowed me to really control the granular control switching to images I could get over the image sizing. Allowed me to be better about the page load than what it could have been, but still, obviously, this page is 10 times bigger than it would have been if I was able to do the videos. But the parsing of the videos by the browser just couldn't handle it. So that was like the main problem. And so once I figured out the canvas element loading and all that stuff, it got solved.
This episode is sponsored in part by Zipify. Here's a stat that should keep you up at night. 80% of the people who buy from your store will never come back. They're gone. You get one shot with these customers, one chance to recover what you spent acquiring them, and maybe turn a profit. That's why upsells matter so much. The problem is most upsell apps only trigger after checkout, post-purchase only, which means you're ignoring every other step of the funnel. Product pages, cart, checkout, all of it just leaking money. Zipify's one-click upsell fixes this. OCU lets you place offers before, during, and after the sale, so you're capturing revenue from the moment someone lands on your site to the moment they leave. That's how it's generated over $1 billion in extra revenue for Shopify merchants. It pays for itself, so there's zero risk. 13,000 merchants are already using it. Brands like Victoria Beckham, Lumi, even Cheech and Chong. You could try it free for 30 days at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT.
Surely you did not write your own animation library here.
I'm guessing you leveraged
one. So here's the thing. Yeah, I've done like spot animations on stuff. Like, I know how to do it. They're like, make this button do a cool little rainbow effect. Like, yeah, you got it. Whatever, man. But this whole thing where like things are moving in on screen and off screen. One of the animations starts as a static image. It comes up from the bottom of the page. And when it hits the middle of the page, it turns into a flipbook animation, like that sort of stuff. I was like, all right, I need something hardcore here. And so there's an animation library called GSAP or GSAP. I'm calling it GSAP. I
called it GSAP too. Yeah. It's GSAP now.
It's GSAP.
You're welcome.
I had never used GSAP in my entire life, but our French developer, Claude,
I don't know if you guys know him.
He's used GSAP a lot. So I had Claude write all the GSAP stuff and I just told him what I wanted it to do. And then he did it. And then if he did it wrong, I told him how to change it.
We use AI. The whole team uses Claude. We like it, but it's not perfect. You know, it makes mistakes. What was your experience here? Because something that's very visual and very creative, you know, that tends to be tougher for LLMs. Phenomenal at writing code, pretty good at doing writing, like actual, you know, human text. But then, you know, visually creative.
Not good at human text. Awful.
Not creative.
Awful human text.
Well, it's got all those tells. It's like, no matter what, it's like, okay, Claude wrote that. What was your experience with Claude helping out?
I mean, it was great. I don't know GSAP. Like, what did you learn? Like, can you work with GSAP? No, I can't. I cannot, because I did not write a single piece of it. Like, I tweaked it. Like, I could see, like, oh, I want this to be, like, twice as fast. And I know that number is the number that controls it, so I could just go change that number. It worked great, and it helped. But I think one of the reasons it worked great is because this design is so built on the user's browser window. It's like it was designed as almost kind of a slideshow. So okay. It's like there's a screen on this screen. There's these three elements. This moves like this. This moves like this. This moves like this. Then they go away. Then on this screen, this, this, and this. Then on this screen, this, this, and this. Like if you break it out into constituent elements like that. So that's how I wrote it. That whole site is just section one. And then it has like five elements max inside of it. Section two, it has like four elements inside of it. So it's incredibly modular. So if they came to me and were just like, oh, can you, the part that says this, could that actually be at the bottom of the page? Like, you got it. Cut that part out. Cut that section out. Put it at the bottom of the page. Done. Like, there's nothing there. So one, it's very modular. So Claude was only working in one very specific independent section at one time. Like, even the CSS. The CSS for almost every section is completely contained within it. Two, I know what I wanted, and I know how to speak to it using the specific language of how I wanted it. I was like, okay, I want the H1 to come in from minus 100 VH and end up at 0 VH and over 3 seconds when scroll top hits zero. And then it writes all that. The actual GSAP code that turned that language into GSAP code that makes it work. I wasn't saying, I want the words "the best knife ever" to come in from the bottom and then scroll to the top. Like, I didn't, that's not what I said. I said the actual units and the actual coding language that it would be using to do it. And
because that's the thing it's good at.
That obviously is how it would know to make it better. I was extremely prescriptive.
I think that's how you get success with vibe coding. It is entirely based on, well, it's prompt engineering, but it's the spec. You know, can you give it a good, reasonable explanation of what you want it to do? And if you can, because you can speak the same language on this common topic, and then you're doing it with GSAP, they have documentation. And so it can ingest that too. It can look up the documents.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, stuff that's open source and is on GitHub. It knows how to look that up. And so like a use case like this with the right person, what a huge time savings to be able to iterate through this.
Yeah. And again, you know, the way I wrote, I mean, the only thing Claude did was the GSAP animation JavaScripts.
Yeah.
So like it was already coming to a section where it was like, all right, there's an H1 and H2, a div with ID this, and like whatever. So I could then just be like, with the H1, do this, with div ID this, do that. Like, there wasn't, it was all structured in a way that was easy for the machine to read and manipulate, and for me to speak to the machine so it would understand me.
And you're forcing it into a system that's very modular. You're conserving your context window. And so if a layperson were doing this, if I were doing this, I would have to give it the entirety of the thing and all that, because I would have to fill in, you know, with just being verbose in what I give it to make up for what I don't know. And then it's like on the first run, it's going to take it a while. It'll get it. But then on subsequent runs, now it's burning through its context window, and I'm going to use up my tokens very quickly. You know, a common problem now, but it's just going to quickly lose performance. You know, like my subsequent revisions just aren't going to work.
I mean, I had already written the static site, and then it was adding animations to it.
I would have to start from zero.
You would start from zero, and
it would never work right.
It would be all tailwind. Like half of it would be spans. Like it would just be absolute spaghetti that no human would ever want to touch. And then when you looked at it, you would have been like, and then
it's so overly specific.
It would be locked into Claude World the whole time.
So it's, you know, I think we're past that idea of like AI replaces developers, especially experienced ones. You know, AI is the tool that developers use. You know, a power drill did not replace a carpenter.
Yeah.
Where I think this is going. Okay. We talked about performance. Oh, we've just gone here and patted ourselves on the back and, you know, our great successes. We have to include, you know, one thing where we could have done better. When we checked it, the darn Instagram.
That Instagram annoys me so much.
The user can opt to have links open in their browser on the phone or in the in-app browser. So the landing page worked on the in-app browser, loaded, worked just fine, didn't crash anything.
Every single web browser you want to load works great.
Scroll through it, works. But because I was very familiar with how it's supposed to look, with like the ideal version, I was like, all right, the Instagram in-app version of that, not quite right, because they jacked us. You know, they jacked our experience with a browser that's like 80% as good as actual Safari. Like, dude, Zuckerberg! You know, get it right. But, you know, ultimately, I was also thrilled, like, hey, it works fine. You know, it worked out, ran fine. But, yeah, that was one. That's tough. And then, you know, trying to test for that. How are you going to do that? I'm sure there's, you know, workarounds and ways. Like, I got to test in an app's in-app browser? That's rough.
Where I thought you were going with this is we have to give all the credit to Montana Knife Company because they gave me the tools that I needed to make this work.
100%. Yeah, let's be clear on
that. This would not have worked if they did not give me 300 perfectly rendered frames of every single one of those flipbooks. I needed they're like, we'll make it like this. Okay, great. Here's what you need to give me. And I told them exactly what they needed to give me, and they came through and they gave it exactly what I wanted.
You know, credit to Brandon, Dan, Mike, everybody at MKC.
Yeah, everybody at MKC.
Phenomenal team of operators who knows how to execute.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, so many times we get these clients that like, you know, why can't my site look like this? Like, here are the people I'm looking at that like I want us to kind of be like. And almost every single time it's kind of like, yeah, they have great images. They have great images. They got great content. They got great videos. Do you have any of those for us? No. Okay, well, then it's not going to be as good as that.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't give it to me. You didn't give me the tool and the stuff needed. You didn't give me the ingredients to make the dinner. Like, I can make the dinner, but you got to give me the ingredients.
Yeah, you're not tall enough to ride this ride until you have this level of content.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, it starts with the strategy, starts with the content. Content needs to lead design. That ultimately, that's the difference. You know, they had this vision and were able to come up with the content to support it and then say, okay, you know, run with this. So each person, you know, was doing their best thing. Like they had a guy who could do the 3D videos for us, and they had a designer who could then, you know, visualize conceptual layouts.
Yeah.
And then they had us who were able to execute, you know, a motion graphic landing page. And so, it's, you know, everybody is in their lane, is a subject matter expert at the thing they need to do. And then you have you know, like Josh Smith is the guy who's, you know, he is the subject matter expert that made this knife happen. You know, and Brandon is the one who's on top of it going, okay, here's the vision for how we're going to launch this. This is the roadmap. And man, when stuff, because we first heard about this probably last year. And then this year they're like, okay, you know, now it's serious. Let's talk about it. And that was in March, I believe.
Yeah.
Maybe like end of February, March. And then, all right, execute. Took a long time.
I just love projects like this that like the only client demand is, can you do this? And I say, yeah, I think so. And then that's all I hear from them.
Like, just find out. Show me what you could do.
Show me, like, do it. I'm not gonna like control you or get all up in your business or get up all in my feelings about how you're doing it. I just want you to do that. Could you somehow get to this end point? And but anything between this meeting right now and the end point is a total open world sandbox for you. And like, yes, please, thank you.
Yeah. Here's the resources you get to do this. Here is our vision and expectations for the ideal outcome. Go.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, if you're like, you know, a creative, a doer, an operator, someone who just wants to execute at their craft, whatever it is, ideal scenario. Oh, you know what? Thank you, Montana Knife Company.
He's right.
Yeah.
And then you'll make millions of dollars.
Yeah, ultimately, the outcome was the knife launched. It sold out immediately. That was the goal. And they did it. And now, all right, the next batch, hopefully, I think the same thing's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure the next batch will be gone. And maybe even the third batch will just be completely gone that in the 1 hour mark as well.
Eventually, I will purchase one.
Yeah, hopefully.
I got to get there early this time. where do we want to go from here? We do. I mean, if you're curious about MKC, we've got, I have two episodes, one last year with Brandon Hirojo from MKC, if you want to check that out. But where do we want to go from here?
I want to do more of this. That's what I want.
You want to do more of this type of work?
I want to do more of this type of work.
But we need people clients, who have the client.
We need clients that have the level of talent and ability to give us the support we need to do it.
Perhaps we have to find them.
Well, they just need to show up at our door.
Just knock on my door. No, but for real, I mean, ethercycle.com. Send us an email. Reach out on DMs, you know, whatever it is.
If you think this is cool, we could do it for you, too.
Love to. Love to. And hopefully, you know, it's funny. They derisively refer to their competitor, Benchmade, which I'm holding a Benchmade knife here. I'm so sorry. As a Butterfly Boy knife, because of the Butterfly logo. But, like, this is... Years ago, you know, when I was introduced to MKC, I was like, this is cool, but it's a niche thing, and it will be extremely successful. Niche things often are. Today, I'm like, man, you're now going to compete with the household name knives. You know, if I go into a big box store, they're going to sell Spyderco, Benchmade, and Kershaw. Or Kershaw's, I think, Benchmade. I think, you know, that's MKC will be in... 5 years, I think they're going to be in those same big box stores potentially, or for sure they're going to be competing with people like Benchmade if they aren't already. That's cool. You know, it's cool to be a part of that. MontanaKnifeCompany.com, check it out. And if you'd like us to build, want to work with us on something similar.
Yeah. The knife is called the Montana. So go to check out the Montana landing page on the Montana Knife Company's website.
It's cool. Well, hey, thank you for your hard work. Give yourself a pat on the back. You deserve it. We'll see you, folks. Hey, before you go, I was hoping you would check out our new app, Promo Party Pro. It is what I want to be the single best, easiest way to run a free gift with purchase promo on Shopify. We just put it live in the App Store. We've got less than 50 users. We want your feedback. So if you need to run a free gift with purchase promo in the near future, install it. Try it. There's a live chat. I check that all the time. And so if you have any issues at all, you know, or any suggestions on how we can make it even easier to use, let us know. We're happy to help. If you want to try it, search Promo Party in the App Store. Promo Party Pro is the app. Give it a shot. It's got a free trial. Thanks.